It's the Rick Emerson Show. By the way, Sarah, this woman says breastfeeding lasts until you stop, and if you do it more on one side than the other, you have one huge boob. because the other one doesn't get as full. What an unpleasant word that
is. Oh, man.
Full. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. 503-733-2970. Rick, your mama is like the... Oh, that's me. That was Steve Allen again interfering. Rick, your mama's like the village bicycle. Everybody gets a turn to ride. All right, let's welcome now... Ow! Hello! Hello, Jim Roof.
Hello.
Hi, boy, I'm deaf. How are you, sir?
I feel like about a dime's with a duck.
Hey, do you know any your mama jokes?
Off the top of my head, no. I mean, yeah, but, you know.
We've been, the people have been sharing it. Not that are radio friendly.
Oh.
No, the people have been sharing your mama jokes with us today because apparently there's some school somewhere that is banning your mama jokes because they deem them hurtful to student morale.
Wasn't that the whole idea, though?
That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying that it's part of the unwritten guy code that you do not take your mama jokes personally. Everybody knows that it's just, it ain't no thing, as the kids say.
Exactly right.
Let me ask you this. What do you know about Brian Blank?
Nothing.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Brian, you know the great thing about you, and I mean this sincerely. The great thing about you is how you're just so disconnected from, like, everything at CNN. Everything that goes on there, the internal workings, and that you're just so nonplussed by the whole thing. And I'm not trying to be smart. I really do think that is great. You come in, you do your thing, you do it well, and you're out, and that's it.
I just try to fly below the radar.
That's it, baby. Brian Blank apparently is the new correspondent for New York, New York.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. There was no memo of any kind.
Are you under the weather?
Yeah.
You got a bad voice going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sick.
Good God. Oh, I know. I feel bad.
Why?
Yeah, because we're making you...
Brian Blank is?
Because we're making you work.
Right,
because...
now, I don't care who he is.
What kind of pain relief are you on, sir?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Bourbon?
Genius. Excellent. Well, okay. Let me just say this. That we were going to talk to Brian Blank earlier today because he... I don't know that he's replacing Gary Baumgartner, as we've said. I don't think
well,
anybody...
Well, yeah. I know that... That Tyler Mooney and some of the other bosses were in New York interviewing people. I know that. I didn't know they hired anybody, though.
I think he may be a part-timer. I don't really know. So we were hoping to talk to him because he's the new New York guy, and also because he was talking about, I believe, the third or fourth filing for bankruptcy by Air America, and we always like to follow their slow-rolling demise. But we called up, and we were apparently he was off the clock already for today, so So we're on his trail, though. We're going to talk to him if it's the last thing.
We need to talk to him and get him on the Ed McCarthy Jim Roop schedule. Doesn't matter if you're on the clock or not. Rick Emerson calls, you talk to him. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, Jim.
Sarah and I feel so bad that you sound so terrible. All right, so here's the thing.
I'm trying to, you know, beef up here, Pat.
No. Don't exert yourself for us.
No, the content is great.
No. I'm not saying you sound terrible like you're uninteresting. I'm saying your voice is, I mean, as a guy who uses his voice for a living, I am empathizing. I feel bad for you. You're obviously in a bad way.
Well, that's an excuse to have an easy day.
Well, that is true. And any excuse. What is your preferred brand of bourbon, sir?
J&B's fine.
Excellent. We'll keep this brief.
That's the Davy stuff. That's the stuff you have every day, you know.
What about for like a special occasion?
Well, I like Crown Royal a lot, too.
Let me just tell you, here's a great Crown Royal story. If this doesn't make you feel better about yourself and your life, here's a great Crown Royal story. So Scotty J., who is our call screener, we had gone out, Thursday, we were talking about how we had to MC this rock show. And the one where I forgot my own name. And which is already a great evening. And Scotty J, he drinks a lot and usually alone at bars late at night, no one around, just staring silently at a table. So you figure he'd be pretty good at it by now. There was this great moment on Thursday when Scotty decided he wanted to do a shot of Crown Royal. He gets the shot, gets the Crown Royal, he throws the shot back, immediately, like, horks it back up. Into the glass, right back into the shot glass. And then, here's the capper. He horks it back into the shot glass. It ricochets out of the shot glass right into his eyes. which is fantastic. You have never seen a look of real pain until you've seen a man throw up some Crown Royal and then it splashes back into his eyes.
Yeah, that stings, man. That regurgitated Crown Royal, that stinks, that stuff.
It's great on like 100 different levels. So, anywho. Well, anyway, so I was going to go on about this, but it was so the guy who created Rocky and Bullwinkle, freaking dead.
Yeah.
Dead, and he also created, I think, with Bob Mosher, the Munsters.
Munsters and My Mother the Car, a couple of things like
that. My Mother the Car. What a weird time in America.
You know, for Barney Miller.
But Barney Miller, let me just tell you this. Barney Miller, except for some of the later shows like The Shield and Homicide, Barney Miller, one of the best cop shows ever. And I will tell you this, you talk to any cop, and they will tell you that Barney Miller is like the most realistic depiction of the job they've ever seen.
Yep.
Because it's a lot of sitting around doing nothing.
Yep.
So he's dead. Well, all right, there you go.
Which is a shame, you know, because he wrote some good stuff. I mean, he was in charge of all those great puns and wordplay and you know, all those great lines that the reason why the adults really glommed onto that silly cartoon because of the witty writing that was going on.
Well, you know, and Rocky and Bullwinkle is one of those shows that these days it is a little bit forgotten about and people don't really give it the credit it deserves for being one of the first cartoons like The Simpsons many years later to appeal on two levels, as you said, to kids and adults simultaneously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
it's just great. I mean, there's some great stuff in there and all those weird characters. And, you know, he said at one point, this Chris Hayward said at one point during one of his interviews that the guy who had him kind of reinvent that Dudley Do-Right character, because apparently, I didn't even know this until I did the story, Dudley Do-Right's been around for years, for decades, since the 40s. He said, it's just a stupid Mountie, have fun with it. Gave him no other direction than that, man. It was great.
Fantastic.
That's what CNN tells me. It's a stupid world, have fun with it.
Excellent. It's a stupid show in Portland. Just do whatever you want.
Oh, they say it's a valuable show in Portland.
Yes, all right, my friend. Well, you are valuable, as is your voice, so I'm going to let you go recover, brother.
I'm groovy. I'm all right. Don't worry about it.
No. I want you to go recover and lift a few for the Rick Emerson Show, my friend.
All right, we'll do, pal.
Jim Roop, my friend. Get better. There you go. Jim Roop in Los Angeles. What a trooper. What a trooper that guy
is. He is. No complaining or anything.
Did you hear that? Boy, that just... And notice how he didn't bring it up. We had to bring up, hey, you under the weather? Yeah. He didn't bring it up. It's not like I said, hey, how you doing, brother? He's like, I'm sick. He did. I said, how
He's
you...
A pro.
He totally... He, you know what? He was there to deliver. He was there to bring the news, as only he can.
So are we going to do the suburban perspective today?
Oh, we should do that now, because here's what we got. We got Carlin at the bottom. We got Tim Riley. We should get a little bit of a suburban perspective here. Hold on, let's just...
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
That's probably too short.
thank you for not playing Connie Chan.
Sorry. It's too late. I was already rolling with it. At least it wasn't the... Hey, how are you? Scotty J. Suburban Perspective.
Doing great.
All right. First of all, now here's the thing. The Suburban Perspective. Now, before I ask you the following question, because people were so enraptured by and enamored by, or a word like that, your perspective on the James Kim situation, which I believe can be summarized as screw him.
No.
Yes, I do believe that's what it was. Look, dude,
that's
earlier
not
today.
True.
Now, listen. Earlier today, we were talking about the Mount Hood mountain climbers. Totally different story, totally different subject, and Scotty again begins typing, unprompted on the screen, a bunch of James Kim stuff. He's about like, James Kim, whose fault was that? Huh? Huh? Like, just let it go, man.
I have.
Dog with a bone. Move on.
We have a new sounder for this segment of the show, too, by the way.
Where is that
it
at?
It could be great. I think it's in the waves.
Monday or waves?
I think
waves?
It's in just waves.
What is it called?
Suburban. That's it.
Gold. Okay. So that's not good. So we're going to use something else.
Okay.
We will need... I don't think we have time for this now because I don't know what the whitest song in the world would be. We've probably done that as a top five. We did top five musical, top five whitest musical performers at one point because there was some unpleasantness about Johnny Mathis being on the list. I don't think we've ever adequately determined what the top five whitest songs, period, were. At some point, we'll have to figure out what that is.
We will.
Okay, so the question for you, Scotty, Suburban Perspective. We were talking about Paris Hilton earlier. Paris Hilton apparently is on a seventh-month sex sabbatical. She's been celibate for 7 months. And she said that she's only, quote, cuddling and making out. She's not really having sex. And I noted that as horrible and as horrifying as the idea of sex with Paris Hilton is, really, the idea of making out with her is somehow even worse. Because I think if you were having sex with her, at least it's sort of a remote part of your body that you can just sort of disengage your brain, and there's a different part of your body that's some distance away getting the job done. Making out with her, it's like you're right up there and got to get that Paris stench off of her.
I just don't understand why you think she's so ugly. I think she's good looking.
She's weird looking, and that you were like typing on the screen that like many guys find her hot.
Right. I guarantee I'm not the only guy on the planet.
The only other guy we ever knew who found Paris Hilton hot was this guy Kyle, who was our previous call screener.
Mm-hmm. And Richard
and we're
Nunn.
A lot alike. Is
and
the thing.
Richard Nunn, but I think that's just because she was like 15 at the time.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, and who knows, maybe there's a little of that with Scott, maybe a little Swiftian appeal there. And so I think maybe it is like a suburban guy thing to be attracted to Paris Hilton. So what Sarah and I were wondering is, Paris Hilton notwithstanding, who are the quintessential Scotty, obviously including Mrs. J, who would be on the list, but...
Well, she'd be number one.
Of course. Apart from Mrs. J, who clearly would be number one on the list.
Scotty just shook
Did
his head
no. No, I shook my head because... You're kind of blindsiding me with having to think of, you know, these women that I would think are hot.
Oh, like you don't
really
have
a list.
Like you don't know.
I don't. Angelina Jolie.
Like every guy has a list. Every guy could give you like five.
Jennifer Aniston. That's another one.
Okay.
She's kind of hot.
Keep going.
Angelina, for sure.
Right.
So those two. I like Paris. I used to think Nicole was good looking.
Nicole Richie?
Yeah, until she got all skinny. She looked better when she had weight.
Was she
chunky Nicole Richie?
Nicole
Richie was never
better.
Chunky, was she?
No,
a little bit.
She wore clothes that didn't fit her appropriately.
She didn't look like a Rwandan.
She wasn't, she was actually normal sized, but she would wear mini skirts with like, you know, her legs and ass bulging out of
them. See, that's the thing. That's no good. You can't do that. You got to dress your weight. That's the thing. It's about dressing your weight. Who else?
And I know there's several others, but it's just trying to think of names right now off the top of my head. I just can't really... here's the thing. I don't understand why you think Paris is not attractive.
Because she looks like a duck. And she looks like her... she looks like a duck, and her face looks like it's made out of some sort of silicone. Her face looks rubbery and greasy. Her face looks like a greasy, rubbery, melting waxwork of a duck. That's exactly why. And plus, she's incredibly skinny. She's all bony. She has no curves to her whatsoever. Like humping a rake. I'm just not into it. And so
maybe it's just her whole bad girl persona.
She has no. But the thing is, that's the thing. She doesn't have. Shannon Doherty has a bad girl
persona.
Yes, she does.
Lindsay Lohan
is a bad girl.
Yeah.
Paris Hilton's just a skank. There's a difference.
There's
a bad girl vibe is totally fine. I'm completely down with having a bad girl vibe. A bad girl. Well, I shouldn't say this. I was going to say, Sarah has some friends. There are friends of Sarah's who have a little bit of a bad girl vibe that I crave. But Paris Hilton doesn't. Paris Hilton just has a scabby, skanky...
Scabby.
Scabby. You just look at her and you're just... You just look at her and I just think, like... I just think, ick. That's the big thing. I just look at her and I just think, ugh. Like, I just want to... Like, even looking at her, I want to start washing my hands. I want to start scrubbing myself just by looking at her. It's just that she looked greasy and she is so over made up all the time. That's the other thing. When have we ever seen what Paris Hilton really looks like? Ever?
Oh, because she doesn't have blue eyes and she wears fake eyelashes.
In the video.
She took off her eyelashes and she actually had her brown eyes and she wasn't wearing all the foundation and her fake hair.
Totally.
And everything. She would look... God, nothing like herself.
No. And I don't think... I think she's ugly now, and that's when she's totally, like, made up with, you know, like, the hair extensions and the inch of base on her face and whatever. Let's see here. Let's see who this is. Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir. Who is this?
You, the Farces.
Hello there. Hello.
Yeah.
Hey.
Gotta give a word out on purpose.
Hey, hello.
Thanks. It's $25, 20 for stoves, washers and dryers, 25 for refrigerators and freezers.
That's a sales job.
And 20, yeah, yes, sir. And we come to your house. It has to be outside.
Delivery driver.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
No, he's a delivery driver.
Just let me get a word in about Paris Hilton.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Knock-kneed. She got a hangdog look, okay? And anybody who wants to know what she really looks like, I mean, I haven't even seen very much of her. The Simple Life season 2, when they're in the trailer park, she wake up in the morning without makeup. I mean, whoa.
And was it bad?
It's sad because, like I say, she got the droopy kind of look on her face. She's just the idol rich. But what happened was, as a teenager, she felt so awkward and out of place that she went to her rich parents and said, can you make me famous? And
totally.
America bought it. It's just like, at best, with all of the millions of dollars of cosmetic effort, she's kind of a little bit pretty. But, I mean, you shave all that off, you scrape off the makeup, woo, ugh.
That's my other thing, is that if she wasn't famous, Scotty, you wouldn't find her hot at all. If she was just some chick on the bus.
Well, her hair looks kind of good.
It's of course it looks good. It's like right off a shelf somewhere. So, all right.
I gotta say this is mud. I'm so glad the show is back. You know, I know it's been a year almost, but it's Tim Riley rules. Thanks.
Peace. Thank you. There you go. The audience is so neurotic.
You know, I had one more.
So
final.
Terrified that we're gonna go away at any moment. They're so scarred from our being not to be able to the glory of us, but you can hear it's so sad in a way. It's great, but sad that the audience is just so traumatized from the last time we got fired.
The final person that we don't see eye to eye on it would be Jessica Simpson. I think she's hot.
I think Jessica Simpson's hot from the neck down. I think Jessica Simpson...
Really?
Yeah, I think Jessica Simpson is a... It's not like she's the ugliest girl on earth. She's not hideous.
What about her compared to Paris?
Oh, she has a gorgeous body.
No, she's got a great body. She's got... This sounds like a dumb cliche, but she's got very pretty eyes. But it's that jaw of hers. She's got that big man jaw. She's like that trap jaw guy on He-Man, Masters of the Universe. Like, you know, that's like she's got that going on.
Her body is good. I think it's desired by other women. I mean, because they want to look like that.
Yeah.
But she's just really long and thin and doesn't really have any curves.
She really is. Yeah, she's a scarecrow.
Just like kind of just all around bony from the top of her head to her like enormous feet.
She's got the kind of, she's got like plant feet too, where they're sort of like swamp thing feet. The thing about Paris Hilton is Paris Hilton's body is found attractive by other women, just as Sarah said, just the way that Gwyneth Paltrow is found attractive, but only by other women.
No.
There are no men anywhere.
No.
No man anywhere finds Gwyneth Paltrow hot. Only other women.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I just don't.
So.
Now, I thought you were going to call me in to get the perspective on the climbing.
Oh, fine. What? Fine.
Oh,
then we got to wrap it up. What is the perspective on climbing?
I do want to clear something up. I want you to know that this whole James Kim thing wasn't like...
You've been taken out of context.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
All I did was say...
I was saying that jokingly.
It's just I can't seem to get my point out.
Your point is what?
My point on the James Kim thing, and then we'll drop it for good, was not to be mean or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just a curiosity... As a person who hears the news as well,
yes.
Wanted to know what was going through their minds when they did that.
He was following
the
road
thing.
That
right.
was labeled.
So you're
this
still saying
way
that
the
you want to grill the widow to find out what they were thinking.
Why do you twist it like that?
But how is it?
How
is it
twisting it? I like how when
you want to grill the widow.
But here's the thing, Scotty. You keep asking, and I keep telling you, and then you reject it. You keep saying what was going on. I say they were following the marked road, and then you say, "Well, apart from that." Well, what do you mean, apart from that? They were following the instructions.
Okay.
And?
I just wanted to know, then, following
these
instructions...
Well, you knew that like a week ago.
Following the instructions, why didn't some light come on? And
they
say,
did.
Look.
They turned around, and that's when they got stuck.
Too far. Okay.
I don't understand. You
right.
asked the question.
And he's saying that he wants to know what the widow...
I don't know.
You
why
don't want to know.
What's going on with this widow
no,
thing?
No, because
you said
want people on her doorstep asking
no,
her what happened.
That is exactly what
Go
you said.
Go back and show me
You're
the
You're like, I just want to know the
that.
Widow's perspective. I want to ask her...
I listened this weekend. I never said
you
that.
You said you wanted people to ask the widow what she was thinking.
Correct.
Because you think the public has a right to know.
Nope. Not because I think the public, anything.
Just you.
I want to know.
Just Scotty.
I
not
would
the
like
public.
To know.
You have a right to
I
know.
Would like
Jay
to know
has a right
what
to
was
know.
Going on. Wouldn't it be interesting to know, gosh, you know, we better turn back, you know, a half mile in. Did that ever occur?
Yes.
They sat in the car for 5 days. Did they try to go back to the road where they came in from?
Are you just not here for large sections of the time you're in
no,
the studio?
Sure, but I didn't want to talk about this, James.
I'm just saying. Yeah. You ask how they got there. We were pointing out, as everybody has, that they were following a labeled road that said this way to the coast. The road, which is closed sometimes during the year, was not closed, indicating that the state felt it didn't need to be closed at that point. And their car got stuck when they turned around, trying to get back out. I don't understand. I guess what I'm saying is you act like there's a big mystery somewhere.
There is.
Okay, listen to me here. I don't understand the X factor, because everything you've listed as a mystery, we've like given you the answer to. I don't understand like what is still vague for you.
How far they went, why they went that far and didn't turn around sooner.
Because they had no indication that the road was wrong, seeing as how the road was labeled as the road to go on.
Okay, fair point.
Like, was the Great Gazoo supposed to appear and go, I know this road is labeled as the one you're supposed to be on, but it's really not.
Then the other question
was... it with Folger's crystals.
It seems like he continued down the road rather than going back to where the pavement was.
Well, that part of the... Okay, I gotta tell you, I've been in that section of the state, and it's very easy to lose your bearings. Absolutely. I mean, okay. You can... Because think about it. Like, you would... Because your sort of perspective is that, like, he knowingly, like, walked off to doom, which, of course, makes no sense at all.
But he's not from here,
Scotty. That is so wrong.
And but you're saying, why didn't he walk the right way? I'm saying, there is no evidence to suggest that he said, that's the wrong way, I will walk there. I mean, there's no evidence that he knowingly walked the wrong direction, because that would be retarded. And he wasn't a dumb guy. I mean, clearly, if you look at the guy, he wasn't a dumb guy.
Nope.
I mean, so there's no evidence that he knowingly went, like, the dangerous way. That's all I'm saying. And that's what everybody seems to be, he knowingly went the dangerous way. There's no evidence of that. That's what we call making stuff up. That's one of those things where the media just sort of, like, promulgated that, I think, and everybody just immediately grasped onto it as being true.
Okay.
Scotty J., you need to be more skeptical about this.
Okay, well, hey. I hope that you realize that I was not poking fun at them, and I was not wanting
to stand
on the widow's doorstep.
Ambush her on her porch.
No.
Why don't we do that, Scotty? We'll do it for the next listener party. We'll bring her in a box.
That's horrible.
We'll uncork it on stage. All right. Well, funnily enough, we're going to talk to Peter Carlin about James Kim when we get back.
Okay.
He's got that, and he's got to call him about the FCC.
I just felt like the mountain thing should be addressed a little bit. I don't have
what
too
was your
much
mountain
to say
thing?
About that. Well, I think some legislature... ought to pass on.
Do you even know what that is?
No.
Okay.
Okay, now listen. I think everybody should be required to have a like you said, GPS or some kind of a locator when they go hiking. If not, then and you should sign something and you got to pay for permits and all that good stuff. Another thing is, well, let's make sure you have working locators on this mountain. We had people lost up here in the 70s and... God only knows how many other times we've had people lost up there. I just think that, personally, this could have saved a lot of havoc had they had some kind of a locator. Okay? Not a cell phone that doesn't work when there's no cell towers up there. Now, go ahead and pick that apart. I had a lot more to say about this as well.
I'm listening.
We were all warned that the weather was going to be super bad, so... I don't know if that's a part of the thrill thing. These hikers like the thrill. We've heard that over and over again. I don't know if part of the thrill is doing it in the worst possible weather that you can think of, but we were all warned that a huge storm was coming, and they hiked that weekend. And the final thing is there's speculation on the two caves, that the guy was in the cave. First of all, the other two guys left because I heard that... what was his name, the main guy? The guy that died?
Yeah, the guy. The dead guy.
It's like Cave Gossip?
Yeah. What's his name? Do you remember?
No.
Alan? Is that his last name?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
The guy that died that they found.
Uh-huh.
The other two guys left.
Cave Gossip.
Because he was hurt. That's what I heard. The other two guys left because he was hurt to go find help. Okay? So he could have been there for who knows how many days, and he might have... came out of the cave that he
Where
was
did
in.
You hear this?
Watching the news and whatnot. Okay, he could have came out. He could have came out to look around
so
and see what's going on.
See, this is just made up, basically.
No, I've heard that...
This is what Scotty J's speculating happened to the other two hikers.
So you're punditizing.
I heard this as good speculation from the news.
So okay, you didn't make it up, but you're relaying what somebody else made up.
Correct. Okay. Now, the guy came out of the cave... probably looked around, started climbing upward. That's when they made this arrow thing, and he probably got disorientated. That's what they're thinking. And he made another cave, right? He couldn't find his cave that he came out of.
But didn't he just put the big letter outside of it?
I don't know how close they are to one another.
Why didn't he just go back the way he came?
Like I said, he might have got disoriented.
I like how he's allowed to get disorientated, but James Kim isn't. I like how only certain people... Is it only white people that are allowed to be disorientated, Scotty? Is that what I'm sensing here?
Nope.
That's a little bit of what I'm picking up.
Not at all. I think that guy was a great guy. I think he was smart. I saw, you know,
what
a couple
guy?
Of the James Kim guy. I saw a couple clips from his CNET, right? Seemed like a really nice guy. It's a shame. It totally is. And it's a shame for the climbers, too. But
I also,
the sheer fact that they were, you know, allowed to, I mean, the choice that they made to go during the weather, number one.
During the weather. They'll go out when there's weather.
That week we had this monster windstorm of 100 miles an hour. I mean, and they were warning us a week in advance, it's going to be windy this next weekend. I mean, was it, we flew from Texas, so
no way
are we going to miss this climbing expedition because we already paid for our airplane tickets and we're not missing this regardless. I mean.
That was Scotty speaking for the hikers.
There you go.
Whatever.
I do agree that the legislature
should have locators. Yes. I mean, at minimum.
The people get disorientated.
Yeah, that too.
We have to take a break now. We're going to come back.
We really can't. Peter
Carlin. Right? He's probably one of these people, Scotty.
I said disoriented.
Uh-huh. So. Okay.
Would you check? Yes, I will.
Thank you. We'll be back with Peter Carlin and a final visit to the Ministry of Truth. This has been The Suburban Perspective with Scotty J. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Emerson Show. Thank you for coming by. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. I'll just sort of imagine theme music in my head because I don't have anything ready. From the Oregonian with a head full of hate and a heart full of soft buttery filling, Peter Carlin. Hello, sir.
Yo, man. How's it going?
Hey, do you have any yo mama jokes?
Not off the top of my head.
Hey, Peter Carlin, your mama's so hairy, when you were born, you almost died of rug burn.
How did you know?
Man, you know, we had some story earlier on the day about it at school somewhere they're banning yo mama jokes because they believe that they are detrimental to the self-esteem of students.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it's tough.
So we are keeping the tradition alive on our program.
When I was a boy, it was all about Polish jokes.
Polish jokes. Tim and I were talking about earlier that is... that is a generational thing, and by which I mean that there was an era in which that started, and then an era in which it stopped, and it only existed for a specific time of a specific period of American history. And my thing is like, why the Polish?
Yeah,
and
like the most recent wave of immigrants. You know, it's always about the most recent wave of immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The etymology of such humor. I mean, you know, my dad was all about Polish jokes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was used to... Even as a kid, I wondered, like what is it they ever did to us? So is there a new... Now, is there a new group that has replaced the Polish in these jokes?
You know, not that I know of. Not yet. It was... You could sort of do that one with a clear conscience because they were white, you know, like, just like us. And therefore, you wouldn't... It wasn't, like, race-based hatred or something. It was just ridiculing other people.
So they were foreigners, but they were still decent people.
They were foreigners, but they weren't necessarily, you know, they weren't the victims of centuries of institutionalized hatred. It was a new cultural thing.
You know, here's another thing I think about. Speaking of, because a lot of this, the Polish humor seemed to be based in the 70s.
Oh,
it
yeah.
sort of reached its zenith there in the Archie Bunkerization of America. And, you know, here's another thing that people don't really talk about, but a thing that I really remember, which is, do you remember, and this is sort of an earlier version of a lot of the internet things, do you remember the sort of crude, usually scatological or sexual cartoons that would be mimeographed and handed around the country from one office to another?
Just vaguely.
I mean, I remember, again, my dad in, like, his wood shop had a bunch of those hung up. And it was, you know, it was like some, like, really bizarrely large-breasted woman. And then, like, you know, and then there was always, like, an Indian in it for some reason. And it was clearly something that had been photocopied and mimeographed. And they didn't have fax machines yet. But it had originated in some office in Tuscaloosa, like, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And even then, I was fascinated by the flow of information and how it went from one place to another. That kind of stuff really does fascinate me.
Well, that was Playboy magazine and the cartoons they used to have in that. Remember that?
Yeah.
They were always like the most, and those always involved women with incredibly large breasts and, you know, who were like totally hot for middle-aged office workers.
As is often the case. Yeah, as is the case in my life.
Yeah.
No, you're right. But it's like that, this is sort of akin to, I don't know if you are familiar with the Star Wars holiday special.
I saw it when it was on TV.
In 1978?
Yeah.
The Star Wars holiday special, for those who do not know, is a terrible, terrible, terrible holiday special that came out in the aftermath of the original Star Wars. So bad that it was only ever aired once. Lucas, like, confiscated and destroyed all the copies of it he could get. It's not listed anywhere in any of the George Lucas or Star Wars websites. He will never make it available to sell. He tries to, like, get people arrested who sell it. I mean, he's tried to remove all traces that it exists.
Is that something you can find on YouTube?
It is something you can find on YouTube, but you can buy it at fan conventions. You know, they sell it, yeah, most Comic-Cons, etc. But you know, the thing about it is, here's the amazing thing about the Star Wars Holiday Special. You watch it, and almost everybody who has ever seen the Star Wars Holiday Special, and I myself have got like a millionth generation, like, VHS copy of it. The thing is, it's one of those shared cultural memories because it, you know, they used to do those interstitials, you know, during primetime programming where they'd say, coming up at 11 on the 11 o'clock news.
Right, right.
And there is this guy who keeps appearing, and this is the era of big hair, of course, and he keeps teasing me, fighting the Frizzies, tonight at 11. And I forget the actual anchor. At one point, I knew his name and the station. It was in L.A.
Wow.
And the thing is, South Park, a couple years ago, South Park did a holiday special. And every time they would come back from commercial, they would have a guy come on the screen and go, fighting the Frizzies, tonight at 11. And it was sort of like a 1% joke. Like,
yeah.
One, but
yeah,
my, and my thing that's so great about that is, I know, like, every Star Wars geek I know has seen the holiday special, and they've all seen the version that has the newscaster teasing the news, fighting the Frizzies, tonight at 11. Well, you know, the amazing thing about that is, that, you know, in 78, VCRs are so rare, but it was clearly taped at somebody's home. There had to have been a single person somewhere who taped that, and that's where they all came from.
That guy's like a hero. He's sort of like the one guy keeping the shard of the true cross.
Exactly. That fascinates me. Like, who is that guy? What suburban living room in California in 1978 had a VCR taping? You know, he is the stone or whatever for that. He's the text of that whole thing. I am fascinated by things of that nature.
Yeah.
Probably
well,
only
a great job, my man.
Well, there you go. And so now I get paid to drone on endlessly about something that like half of 1% of the people know about.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't want to get all bogged down in the gloom and despair and so forth, but you had a pretty good column about the James Kim thing the other day.
Oh, thank you.
And James Kim, who I'm not looking at anybody's particular direction, but there are many people who are perhaps not as sympathetic towards his passing as they might ideally have been. And I think you had pointed this out, that really does, in a way, like the James Kim thing kind of brought out the worst in a lot of people. For a guy who made, I think, what seemed like a pretty understandable mistake in some ways.
Uh-huh.
And just, was it you had mentioned that your inbox was just like full of like, you know, screw that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I think I put that in my blog a day or two later.
Yeah.
It was astonishing. I mean, on the one hand, I got a lot of like nice emails from people who, you know, just were touched by the story or felt badly for him, and, you know, I mean, how could you not? I mean, people make mistakes all the time. It's just that you don't always get called into account in such a dramatic way. But like, I can't even tell you how many times how many times on the freeway I'm like diddling around with a CD player or trying desperately to get away from, you know, some horrible song on the radio, and, you know, my mind flickers away from what I'm actually doing, which is rocketing down a highway at 70 miles an hour with people rocketing toward me, you know,
right,
several feet away. But, like, you know, you make a wrong move, and boom. I mean, that could happen to any of us at any time. I mean, and that was, you know, yeah, they seem to have made a bunch of kind of crucial, dumb errors, but, you know, God, I do that all the time. It's just that, you know, at some point, you know, occasionally, you know, you can, most of the time, you can sort of back your way down and kind of get out of it. But for these poor people, it just didn't work out.
Totally. No, I think about that a lot, actually, when I go through, like, crosswalks and stuff late at night, and I think, like, you know, all I need to do is sneeze at the wrong moment, and some guy walks in front of my car.
Or, you know, you see these people driving around downtown with their phones, you know.
Right.
And just jabbering away. I was walking, I was, you know, holding my my toddler a year or so back downtown, crossing, going down Salmon or something, and crossing 6, and the light had long since turned, and I was about to step into the street, and this dude is just bombing down the way, and he goes right through the red light because he's jabbering on his cell phone.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even watching. And the only thing that was gratifying about it was that at that very moment, right across the street from me, waiting to go also, was a cop. You should have seen the look on his face when that guy, like, cut him off. I mean, those lights were on, and that siren was going, and that dude, I almost was going to, if I hadn't had my son with me, I would have walked down there just to watch the dude getting, you know, getting...
just to give him a nice wave while he's being arraigned.
Or I would have kicked him when the guy had him down on the ground.
Fantastic. Like,
whoops. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, we have a question for you. This is Dan. Dan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian.
Yes, I was just wondering, some... usually the Shield comes out on January, you know, around the second week of January, but they got some other bad show coming out.
Dirt.
Yeah. Oh,
the Courtney Cox thing.
That looks good.
Well, you know, I wasn't sure. It sort of seemed interesting, and then I just saw, like, a really hellish review of it somewhere. So I haven't looked at it yet, but it's on my desk. I got to take a look. You're asking when the Shield's going to come on. I think it's in March.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. And let's see. We have Ray. Ray, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Peter Carlin.
Hi, Rick. I don't want to be too cruel about this, but I think there's management of risk assessment. You know, I've been driving on back roads for 40-plus years. I have to ask people real straight up, when you run out of a regular paved road, maybe it's time to reconsider your navigational choices. It's a risk assessment for mountain climbers. People do this. They know it's a risk. Bad things happen when you do everything right. But I've been to Southern Oregon. What in the name of God is surprising about there's a beach this way? In the summer, the road's passable when there's frickin' paved roads that go to the beach from Roseburg.
Well, I don't think anyone's debating that the guy screwed up. I mean, but just, I mean, yeah, clearly that he screwed up. They were way out of their usual terrain. I mean,
and it's tragic.
It was horrible. It was a tragedy, but it doesn't mitigate the tragedy of it. I mean, it was a horrible thing. This poor guy died, and you know, I mean, and yeah, it was. But, I mean, no, I don't think anyone's going to say, like, oh, you know, he didn't make any mistakes. But I mean, I think the sobering thing is that everybody makes mistakes. You know,
well, everybody. That's absolutely true. But I think part of the process here is that we have tried to make the tragedy the only story. Part of the story is learning how to deal with your own decision-making process. This happened to those people down in Nevada about 20 years ago now, trying to go down a back road going toward the Black Rock Desert. Absolutely horrible. They got lucky.
Yeah. All right, well, there you go. That's Ray. Well, you know, and the thing is, and not to pick on Ray here, but you're totally right. The people do this. It's like they say the... Well, it's tragic part, but they almost say that part, like, angrily. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, yeah. Well, I suppose it's tragic and all, but still.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and that guy obviously has a lot of experience with this and a lot more smarts. There's a kind of, wilderness smarts that you have to have, which I think it's in some situations, like if you're climbing up Mount Hood or something, you know, you really got to have. And it can't even save you sometimes if things really turn ugly, like they seem to have done, obviously did last week. But, you know, you're there in your Saab station wagon with your 3 cell phones and all your other electronic doodads, and you're thinking, like, there's just no way I could ever possibly get so far beyond redemption that I can't, find my way out of it.
Totally.
And you feel a kind of an illusion of control, which I don't think necessarily exists. But I think we all experience that on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, man, at any given moment, you are so close to death in so many ways.
Oh, yeah. I sit around and get anxious about flying in airplanes. And, you know, like they always, or they used to remind you, they don't always do it now. It's like, you know, this was the safest part of your journey, jerk.
Right. Totally.
Have fun out on the freeway.
Yeah, but it's like when you're on the freeway, it's that illusion of control, though, that you think that, you know, you're, I'm fine now, nothing can hurt me, I am behind the wheel.
Yeah exactly. So that's your biggest problem is that you are behind the wheel.
What's coming up in the Oregonian that we should be reading, apart from everything?
Apart from everything else? Blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Well, you know, the Decemberists, our local band, are going to be, or at least the one dude, the guitar player, is going to be on the Colbert Report on Wednesday night, having a guitar shred-off with Stephen Colbert.
Right on. Very cool.
Very cool. So I spoke to him, and I'm going to, hopefully, if I can get out of bed, I'm going to write that up and get that into the paper by Wednesday.
It's a hard life.
Well, dude, I'm sick. Didn't you know?
No, I didn't.
Talking to you from my sick bed at home.
You've been
really prone as I write this, as I speak to you.
That's devotion.
Isn't it, though?
That's why we love Peter Carlin.
You know what else it is?
Mm.
It's boredom. I've been in bed for 3 days.
I'm glad to amuse, sir. All right, read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. Get better.
Hey, I'm taking it a day at a time.
All right. Thank you. There you go. That's Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen, from the Oregonian. All right, we're back to wrap things up after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Just a moment, we'll talk to mailman Chris. Sam, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
What's up?
I was driving around trying to do some shopping for my girlfriend.
Yes.
Couldn't find the DVD at Hollywood Blockbuster, Best Buy, you name it, couldn't find it anywhere. I went to CD Game Exchange and found exactly what I needed.
So you went to which one did you go to?
The one on Hawthorne.
Excellent, excellent. Well, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great place. Now, what should you say what you got?
Great Expectations is an old movie, so...
Oh, right, yeah.
Go get something that's, you know, good and old, and it's hard to find, so there you go.
Excellent. Well, thank you for patronizing a sponsor for the Rick Emerson Show.
And I'm not on the air anymore?
I'm sorry?
Are you on the air?
I'm right. We're right here, sir.
Oh, well, I'm here, too. Hey, I got one more thing for you.
Yes.
Your mom is so poor, she can't even afford to pay attention.
Thank you. No, thank you. All right, there you go. All right, so 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Let's get two more here quickly. Curtis, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up? Curtis. Yo, Big C. All right. Well, never mind then. I don't know the postman as a person. Mailman Chris. Hello, sir.
Hey, buddy.
What's up?
Oh, you know, I was trying to get my son to actually come on the air now instead of me because he's actually been doing my job for me today. I'm home with the littlest one who's sick, and calling the oldest one, the one there with the...
Are you sure the oldest one didn't poison the littlest one?
I could.
I'm just saying what we're all thinking.
Yeah. So he wrote everything down at the beginning of the show. He listened. He says that you got Peter Carlin and Jim Roop and Bob Costantini. And did you have the weekly radio address?
No, I failed to get to the weekly radio address.
Okay, so you owe one.
I failed to get and I get to fail. Yeah, no, that's true. I got to everything but that. I have no one but myself to blame for that.
Yeah, so right. That's it.
That brings us to what, to one?
To one.
All right, excellent. Well, that's good. I'll take one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not counting the 68 you still owe.
I don't know anything about that. I think that
you we're not going to forget about that.
You got to let the past be the past. Let's also not bring up the 10 that I owe Aaron and Scott at Film Fever Radio.
Well, we won't mention that either.
All right, thank you.
Take it easy.
There you go. Talk to you tomorrow. This is Mailman Chris.
Can we bring Scotty in here?
Oh, yeah. Scotty J.
Scotty J. I don't know what else to say except for,
Scotty J. Hello, sir.
How's it going?
Scotty, I'm sorry if we've been...
Why are we bringing Scotty in?
Because I feel bad.
I don't feel... Now, look, we didn't put any words in your mouth in the last segment.
We kind of snicker, and we let him talk himself into a corner.
Like, no one snickers at the stuff I say, or you, or... We didn't put any words in your mouth, to be fair.
No, that's fine.
We had an open microphone, and you gave your thoughts, your perspective on James Kim and on the climbers. The worst that can be said is that we did not agree. Or that we find some of your opinions to be retarded. Seriously, but like everybody doesn't think that about me. Like there are people who don't think half of the crap I say is retarded.
Right.
I get the feeling that you think we have put words in your mouth, and I don't believe we have.
I'll say something, and then you'll take the worst out of that.
You're being defensive.
Well, okay. I realize that. It seems like I'll say something, and then you'll twist it to a worser than what I really said. And I
do not.
I know that sounds bad the way I just described that, okay? I got a bag of marbles in my mouth today. I don't know, but...
I do not believe that we have made anything you said worser by...
Okay. That's not a word. I realize that.
See what I'm saying? I don't really think we need to twist anything, is my point. I don't really think that's required.
I just want Scotty to know that he's loved by us. Will you tell him you love him, Rick?
Well, thanks.
Rick, tell him.
Yeah, thanks.
I love you.
That's fine.
Did you hear that?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay.
We love you, Scotty. Say you love us, too.
Love you, too. You got a couple calls on there, it looks like. I don't know.
All right, well, hello. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
No time.
All right. Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM970 Solid State Radio. Newsman is Tim Riley, the PA who is loved by us and everyone is Scotty J. Dave Zim manages the Rick Emerson office. He's thanks to Roop, Costantini, and McCarthy. See y'all tomorrow. Love Masters, grind it down. Like us next. Bye.
Cutting the frizzies at 11. Cutting the frizzies at 11.